back with episode 796 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Boy, is the news coming fast and furious this week. I didn't even mean to do that, honestly. I really didn't.
Yes. Well, we won't be talking about the latest Fast and Furious movie. Sorry for those who were looking for our commentary on that. You're just going to have to live without it. Instead, we're going to get into some other movies that at least I have seen recently, some news from Star Wars Celebration, and then some other things that have been coming down the pike in the last couple of weeks regarding the genre. But before we do any of that, Gary, why don't you go ahead and give some kind of disclaimer?
Yes. In this case, we've given you several weeks to catch up, hopefully, on the some of the news developments that have come up, and some of them are brand new. So we just like to give you a heads up that we will spoil and give the latest, greatest news, regardless of whether that ruins your day or makes your day in some cases, I hope. So we don't apologize so much as friendly warn you that we will be talking about everything that's gone on in the last week or two.
That's right. So, well, let's see. How shall we start? Gary, it's been a couple weeks, so any highlights that you wanted to go ahead and throw out to the audience?
Oh, geez.
Not on the list?
Let's see. Well, no, just personally, I'm still doing hiking training, and I've lost 15 pounds so far, and yeah, I might be able to fit back into my Captain America costume again, which is exciting for me. And secondly, I've been... rereading some old science fiction books over the past few weeks. I'm currently reading Childhood End again. I hadn't read it in so long that, honestly, it's almost like a new book for me. It's probably been 20 years since I last cracked it open, so it's really enjoyable. And I had the pleasure, as all this Star Wars news has been rolling out the week that we're recording this, to go through the expanded universe with my daughter, Diana, you know, going through the whole Thrawn trilogy, the Yuuzhan Vong, and how the Skywalkers originally paired off, and so to speak. And she's like, oh, now I understand why when, like, Han Solo's son was named Ben, you groaned. I said, yes, exactly. So that's been fun, increasing their education. I'm trying to think, see anything else that's come up. I think that's been about it. It's been a little bit of a crazy week, and I've been sick for a bit, but I'm back 100% now and starting to catch up on things.
Cool. I would say the last couple of weeks has been a little bit busy here as well, but I did manage to go and see, a couple films, which I'll get into in a moment. But yes, I've also been following some of the news coming out of Star Wars Celebration. And in fact, this past week, I just started reading, and by just started, I mean I'm literally like one chapter in. It's like barely even counts. But I just started reading Thrawn, the novel that has come out regarding the, you know, written by Timothy.
Oh, I know, yes. Yeah.
And kind of, it's supposed to be taking his original concept of the character from way back in the 90s and bringing it up to date to the current canon, so. One thing that I did notice, which is kind of an oddity, just as a complete aside and left turn, in the front of the books, you know how they used to, in the old expanded universe, put the novels in roughly chronological order?
Yes. Oh, yeah, and that helped, because you'd go back to try and figure out what the heck's going on, and it'd be good, because if you had jumped into the middle of a series somewhere, you could backtrack and see what you need to get to catch up or to stay in line, yeah.
Yeah, right now they're doing the exact same thing with the new canon, and it's really daunting to, you know, maybe go back to one of those old hardcovers and see the huge number of titles that were in the expanded universe, and now realize it's about you can fit it
five, six books, yeah. Well, you know,
to keep up, I guess. But.
Well, this is the same discussion I was having with my daughter about this whole expanded universe. I was like, I said, Diana, they, they've been writing books, stories, video games, and, you know, for the past 25, 30 years to fill in all this history, and it's just got swiped away, legends notwithstanding. And she's like, I was explaining Shadows of the Empire to her, and she was just awestruck. She's like, what? So why didn't they make a movie about that? I'm still trying to figure it out. But
yeah, there's a lot of people that would love it if they would just go ahead and do that, but I don't think they're going to.
Oh, no, it'll never happen. But at the same time, there's just, you know, this rich universe that I hope it doesn't get... I was going to say, I hope it doesn't get quite brushed away, but, you know, Thrawn is hope that they continue to incorporate some of these wonderful parts of the universe into this new timeline, so to speak.
Very cool.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, yeah, I am very curious to see how the Thrawn story changes up and how they do that in the new canon, especially given how well the character integrated into Rebels. So, let's see here. Well, what I'll go ahead and do from here is talk about a couple of... Unless you wanted to get into more details about Celebration, since it's kind of fresh in your mind.
I was going
to
say, now that you're talking about Rebels, they did announce that, a few different things. They announced that there will be a fourth season of Rebels coming out. So that's great news. Then the sad news, they also said that that it will be the last season.
Oh.
They want to move on to, I guess, I don't know what, a different project. They didn't say that the band was breaking up, per se, so much as they're going to be doing something different. And they didn't quite say what that was, just that it will not be Rebels. So I'm not sure. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But it's still, you know, it's a little sad that this show has come such a long way from its first few episodes and, you know, expanded the Star Wars universe and actually come back to influence the films themselves in reverse, which is an amazing thing. You know, as you think about those hammerhead ships that were introduced in Rebels and then took out the Star Destroyer in the new movie. So, so not only is it pulling from the movies to feed itself out, it's actually given back. So that's really nice. And as a little pet side project for people who are really paying attention, if you go back to Return of the Jedi and you look at the rebel troops storming Endor, one of them has a white beard to them. And Dave Filoni, who pretty much runs Rebels, has said that actually is Rex, and they're going to be making some costume changes slightly this year to link that together better for us.
Oh.
But so Rex has managed to go all the way from, you know, from Attack of the Clones. He made it all. The character is now officially all the way through to Return of the Jedi. So that's kind of a nice little. I don't know if it'd be a trivia question, but you know he's tying against R2 now, I suppose.
Wow. Yeah, that's not so bad. Good for him.
Yeah. No, but it's a cute little thing. They're like, yeah, you're right. The guy does kind of look like him. They never named him. So hey, what the heck? We're gonna make it happen. I was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense actually. So, yeah, it is sad to know that that is going to be the last season. But at the same time, I like it when creators have that opportunity to know that that's where the end of the line is going to be and plan for it, right? I mean, for the most part, we've noticed, Warehouse 13 notwithstanding, most shows that have that kind of advance warning manage to stick the landing better than, say, if they just have to guess when they're going to come to an end, right? I mean, there's a couple shows that we could talk about and we'll talk about next episode that you can see the stark difference between having to guess whether or not, or at least anticipate the potential for more versus knowing that you're at the end of your line. So let's see here. Anything else from Celebration? I mean, obviously there was the trailer for Last Jedi that came out.
Do you consider that? I was talking with some people and they want to use the term teaser more than trailer, but we'll see. It is very interesting. Some of the lines that were said, Luke wants the Jedi must end, so to speak. So and it fits with the title, so we'll have to see what that means exactly. It's very vague and ambiguous, so I'm not so...
Is it a trailer? They called it a teaser for a reason. I guess that's what I should have called it too, is the teaser trailer, but it was enough to whet the appetite, and quite frankly, I don't want to see much more than that. I know that I will. I know that we're going to get inundated with it between now and the end of the year, but this is a good start. Like you said, that one line is enough to make people really perk up, even fans, right? Because people could speculate, but now there's a lot more to it, and now they have to really think about, like, whoa, what does it mean, like you said. So that's always really exciting.
And they, let's see what else. They also went back on an earlier statement that they said that Carrie Fisher would be included in 9. They've gone back and said that she will not be in 9 after all. Not that anyone objected to it, but for reasons they didn't say, maybe the editing would just have been too forced, or they didn't want to do CGI on it. I'm not sure, but they've said that they're declining on doing that. So that was interesting. It was really nice. They were simulcasting a lot of the convention, more than I ever expected them to. And there was a nice panel by Mark Hamill about Carrie Fisher. It ran about over an hour and a half long. And it was a really nice, touching sort of sentiment. And there was some clips shown and things like that. But it was a really nice, I don't know if closure is the right word, but it was a nice gathering to have together of appreciation. One of the things he said was, if she's in heaven, she's probably looking down from a smile and then slowly giving us the finger. Because that's the, you know, just the type of jokester personality that she was. So that was really nice. Let's see. Also, Harrison Ford made an appearance, his first appearance at a Star Wars at least a celebration convention. He's not one to typically make convention appearances, but he has been coming out just a little bit here and there. So that was a very pleasant surprise. Trying to think what else, anything crazy else of merit that they mentioned. They mentioned that I couldn't quite understand what it was, but there was going to be some type of, I want to say maybe it's a cartoon with primarily female Star Wars characters. And then they were going to, you know, tie it in with dolls and things like that as well. But there was some mention of it, but no real details other than the project's existence. Something like a Force for Change. I'm waiting to see more on that.
Oh, yeah. This was there was a little bit of information, but very little. This was kind of about the, you know, female heroes and so forth and all of that, right?
Yes. So, let's see. There was that. Can you think of something I'm missing, John? You're trying to hit most of the major...
Not a whole lot. I wouldn't say that it was necessarily sparse, but at the same time, if you were looking for a huge amount of information, you really didn't get much more than a slight extension, perhaps, of what you already knew. I think that the big one for me was the fact that, as you said, they're not going to try to have Leia in 9, and I actually think that makes sense. It really was pushing the boundaries of how they were going to pull that off, and they said they didn't want to do something like they did in Rogue One with Tarkin, so I think it makes perfect sense for them to hold back and just say, you know what, we'll explain it somehow. But I do like the fact that she is still 100% as intended to be in 8. At least that's the way that they continue to say it. I would suspect that if there was any change that they made, they're going to just leave that for right now and maybe address it later if somebody calls them out on it. But I think that for right now, they're just going to say, look, we're going to keep it the way it was, and whether or not that's true or not, we'll find out later. I can see them making small little alterations to fit the way that they're going to write her out of 9.
Yeah, nice little spaceship blowing up or something.
It really isn't that hard to figure out how you could do it, but okay.
Yeah, planet blowing up or something. But yeah, you're right, so we'll have to see. But that's sort of nice. I sit back and think about it, though. It's like, wow, 40 years and we're still getting this kind of fervor and excitement and studio backing and stuff like that. I wonder what it would have been like if Star Trek actually had studio support. but
that other little show.
Yes,
I was listening to a Babylon 5 podcast recently where they tried to say that the WB really wasn't the one that was holding it back, and I just almost choked on the water I was drinking at the time as I was driving down the road. That would have been a really bad explanation for having an accident, but yeah. Okay.
I know, it's like, well, how do you know? Well, I was in the room when JMS talked about it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, other than that, do you have anything? Well, yes, I talked to the production assistants in person. Do you know what about anybody else? Well, yeah, I've talked to several production people who often say the same thing. Really? Who? The Warner Brothers liaison. Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of a matter of record.
Yeah, I'm like
several billion times over.
So, but anyway, we haven't mentioned this on screen, but not screen, but on our show. But there is currently an app, I know it's an Apple app, and I'm not sure if it's on Google Play or not, called was it G90? And they are currently streaming legally Babylon 5. They're streaming Fringe and several other shows. It's Go 90. And it's free. There is advertising on it, but these are shows that aren't necessarily available in a lot of places. So if you are interested, go download the app. And like I said, Fringe, Babylon 5, several other shows, or many other shows are on there as well. But those were the two that I gravitated towards when I found out that they were streaming them again. So, Babylon 5, as I was actually wearing my free Babylon 5 shirt a few days ago, I was like, did we win? Well, kind of. At least it's in one place now, so that's a start. So
yeah, that app, for those who want to once again to hear it, Go 90, G-O-9-0. So looks like Go-Go, right? But Go 90. I have it right here on my phone. I have it on my tablet. I have it everywhere.
I know. So,
there you go. Just in case, right?
I know.
I need to see which versions they're dealing with, though.
What do you mean?
Whether or not it's the absolute, like, original versions, the DVD versions, and so forth. I haven't watched enough to know which one it is.
I believe it's the DVD version.
Okay. Too much to ask that it was the original.
If I tell you the second DVD version, will you know what I mean?
The second DVD version. I may have lost that in the ether. Why don't you explain for our audience?
Oh, real simple. Real easy. They actually made two different DVD breaks. One was for the European market, and then they reconverted it from PAL back to NTSC formats, which is our standard American formatting for television. And something gets a little lost. there's some clarity issues and, I swear, some screen clipping. But I've never gone to frame by frame, so... but yeah, so it's the NTSC converted version of the PAL Laserdisc conversions. Just to keep it clear. But but especially on a small screen, picture quality is very good. For some reason, I don't know why I started off on season 4.
Those are pretty good episodes, so I think it's
started with Sheridan and Garibaldi both coming back, and I was like, oh wow, I forgot how good season 4 actually was when you think about it, all the stuff they were cramming into it. That it's really good. So if you haven't had a chance to watch it or don't feel like pulling out your DVDs all the time, it's right there and available for you to plug away and watch. So my daughter is really big into X-Files, so I showed her an episode or two of Fringe. She's like, ooh, I like this. I said yes.
Yes. My question for you would be, have you tried to do like AirPlay or something to a larger screen with the Babylon 5 episode streaming?
No, I haven't. I live in a morass of no one else in my family likes Babylon 5, so I'm often forced to hide and lurk around corners and watch it on my own. But I will try it. I definitely could. We have an Apple TV on our big screen, so I will put it up there and see how it translates.
Yeah, I'm curious because I actually am probably going to try that myself. So I'll see what my opinion of it too is. Maybe we can say that next week, what our experiences turned out to be.
Sounds good.
All right. Beyond that, let's see. Well, I'll go ahead and talk about what I was able to see.
Yes.
A couple movies inspired by or directly being anime. First one being Ghost in the Shell. Now, I might be mildly irritated with Fast and the Furious and Boss Baby.
Okay. Now you're a fan and you've seen the original ones, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
All right.
I may have mentioned before that I watched the original anime again. The film, the original film, the week before going to see this. So I'm pretty familiar, for those who would be like, how could you say this? If you're familiar with it, you couldn't possibly have to know. Certainly it is an adaptation. And the way that I see it is that I think anybody who's really being honest with themselves would say that it would be hard to do a point-for-point adaptation of the original anime film and make that into a big-budget movie. It's like taking some of the most cerebral episodes of Star Trek and trying to put that into the big screen. It usually doesn't work. And it doesn't work because people are necessarily unable to handle it. It's just not mass appeal, right? I mean, you're not going to sit there and watch a film that is going to... A huge number of people aren't going to sit there and watch a film that is constantly challenging you to try and, really think deeply about the philosophical underpinnings of the... it's like, no, some movies you just want to go and enjoy. And the way that I look at this is that it emphasizes the action a little bit like the later spin-offs of the original film did, which is perfectly fine. I think the visuals are dead on. I really enjoyed those a lot.
Now, is it dead on? Is it dead on like Watchmen was, or like can you literally see screenshot for screenshot matching up?
In many cases, yes. There's actual scenes that you can sit back and say this is a direct translation, and that's pretty cool. I mean, some of them are in the trailer, which of course they did intentionally to show people who are familiar with it that hey, we're actually doing what you want us to do, which is adapt certain scenes. They take certain things and rearrange them, which is interesting, which I'm sure that some people didn't like, but I thought was perfectly fine. Again, this is an adaptation; it's not perfect. I thought that the casting was fine. I really don't agree with the controversy over it. And let's face it, I mean, putting it right out there, this film did not do well.
No.
And unfortunately, it's pretty much disappearing already 2 weeks later. Not happy about that at all. But I do feel like this movie is also has gained an unnecessarily negative reputation because of the casting choice. I think that right now there are, what really annoys me is that there are people who are out there who are happy that it flopped. And I have to really ask the question that if you're making the argument that the film, I mean, there's a couple reasons why that annoys me. But the first one is that you're making the argument that the film should have starred a lesser known Japanese actress. If the film only made $20 million opening weekend with a super well-known lead actress, how little do you think it was going to make with someone that nobody knows? So you really didn't want this to do horribly. You wanted this to do well so that you could make the argument that it would have done equally well with someone else, not equally bad. That's really kind of a bad argument. The other thing that annoys me about it is kind of something that we've talked about before, and I just really hate how the sci-fi genre community, fans in general, fandoms in general, have this bad habit of eating their own. We should be supporting things, not finding ways to knock them down. Because when a film of this scale, of this magnitude, of this ambition, fails miserably, what happens is that studios decide not to do more. And then you'll inevitably have somebody who is really happy to see that Ghost in the Shell did poorly in the theaters, and they'll be asking, well, why didn't my favorite property get made into a film? Gee, I wonder why. It's kind of obvious why. You know, it's if you don't go out and watch this, it's not that you necessarily have to go out and watch it, but if you're going to sit there and rip it apart for days after days on social media, the studios pay attention to that. They're looking for a scapegoat for why the film didn't do well. And they're going to take all of that negativity and they're going to staple it right to the front page of why we will never make Akira. Why we'll never make this other movie. Whatever you want to, you know, pick out of the ether. Those are the reasons that those films don't get made. Why can't they make a proper adaptation of this? Because you told them that you didn't want one, basically. Don't blame yourselves, you know? So it just irritates me when it's like, you know what, if you didn't want to go and see it for whatever reason, fair enough, you didn't go to it. But you went out of your way to bash it. And you did it for stupid reasons in some cases, to be perfectly blunt. It explains in the film why things are the way they are. Now, you can disagree with certain parts of the film and certain aspects of it. That's perfectly fine. But at the same time, they addressed it. The creator of the property said, this is a good representation.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
It's true to my vision, or at least close enough, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just it's slightly galling. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, all the negativity aside, did you feel it was a fair version of it?
Oh,
of the story?
I enjoyed it immensely. Knowing what, you know, they were going to have to do, at least intellectually, going in, I actually felt like they went much further into things than I thought that they were going to do. As a few people said, they do put a few of the themes very much front forward and practically tell you exactly what they're trying to get across. So it is a little bit on the nose, but then in other aspects, they are really subtle about certain things. And I think that if you go in just letting them tell the story their way, you'll understand what it is that they're really reaching for, and that they go to a lot of the same places, even if they don't go quite as deep. A lot of stuff about identity, about the whole idea of, you know, what is your, you know, yourself, so to speak, your understanding of your own consciousness and things of that nature. They get into all of that. Identity, pick your poison as far as that goes, because, you know, obviously there's been a lot of properties that have delved into the same kind of concepts over the years since then. But this is a really good adaptation of it. It looks correct. It feels right. The casting is really good. I think that Scarlett Johansson actually did an amazing job as the Major. Visually, it looks the way that it should. Of course, they make it PG-13 rather than the hard R that it would have to be in order to do it a full adaptation. But I think that if you were sitting back and saying, can somebody spend $100 million plus and make an adaptation of this? This is what you would expect to get. And I came away very happy. It felt like I was watching today's version of Blade Runner.
Oh, okay.
It has a lot of the same aesthetic, and it delves into a lot of the same ideas. So, in fact, even the score kind of was reminiscent of it. So, yeah, I was very happy with it. And I would say when it comes out on on demand or whatever, what have you, I recommend it. I recommend people go and see it. And judge for yourself now that the hoopla is gone. And I think that over time it'll be seen and viewed a lot more favorably once there's distance between it and the unnecessary controversy. So, I'm actually curious what other people's thoughts are on the film. Certainly, if we get a chance to talk to Edmund, I'd love to know what he thought, because this is one of his favorites. So, I think he, like me, he's seen a lot of the stuff that came after, and I'm hoping that means that he'll also agree that they were trying to get a kind of gestalt of all the different versions of the property in one film, and that was kind of why they went more with the action route. That and the fact that, again, you can't really tell a story that is all about musings of your true self and so forth. That's kind of hard to do unless you're doing an art film. I don't think that's what they were going for. Now, I will say that I then very quickly soon after that went to go see a film in the theaters that you can find throughout, in some places. I'm sure that it will become available more widely soon. But it is currently, I believe, still the number one top grossing anime film in Japanese history. And it's a recent film called Your Name. On the surface of it, well, first of all, I'll just say, we waited a long time for this to come out in the U.S. The version I saw was the dubbed version. There was also the subbed version, but that came out on a different night. And it's one of these deals where, and this is increasingly happening, and I'm kind of loving the fact that this is happening, they are doing these, like, one-time-only screenings of anime films and so forth. And there's a few different groups that are doing it. This came out of Funimation Films. Crunchyroll has a new one that they're putting out that every month they're going to have what they call Anime Movie Night, where they're going to put things out in certain theaters. Fathom Events does some things. They were the ones who did the Attack on Titan live-action films, for instance. So you can kind of like poke around, and I've bookmarked 3 or 4 different sites that do this. And every month or so, you can go out and you can see some of the more recent anime offerings, whether it be feature films or, episodes of shows and so on. But this is an actual feature film, and as I said, it's extremely popular in Japan. And I have to say, it lived up to its reputation. It's really good story. It is not what you're expecting. It's billed very much as a kind of romantic film, and it is, but there are definite genre elements, and I will say no more, because they pop up right at you at the very beginning. And I'd say that it's very true to form, that it's almost two films in one. The first half, you think you know what's going on, and then something happens, and the film takes a completely different turn that's consistent and actually starts putting the pieces together in a very interesting and thought-provoking way. And it's just really strong story. The dubbed version has really good voice work, so it's not one of these ones that you lose a lot by watching the dubbed version. You actually get a pretty good performance across the board. A lot of love was put into making sure that there was a good adaptation, or dubbed version, so good direction for the voice actors and so forth. So it's a high quality production there, and yeah, I just really enjoyed it. I would recommend it to anybody who's even vaguely into anime. Again, not exactly the kind of film that I usually would see, but I'm really glad that I got to see it. It's kind of been out there, so and I'm sure that it will be available on demand in other places fairly soon. So please look for it. Now, ironically, the creator of Ghost in the Shell was basically saying, "Hey, yeah, go ahead and see that movie. You'll see that adaptation," and nobody listened. The creator of Your Name saw it become so popular, and he actually implored people not to go see the movie, because he's so hyper aware of the imperfections that he doesn't like people saying how it's, the best anime movie of all time. He wants it to kind of not be, he doesn't want it to be lauded that highly. And so it's a little bit ironic that, so many people really enjoy it to the degree that they do, because it's like the creator is almost one of these, like, but I see every little frame I would have loved to have done, had another year for. And it's like, no, dude, just move on. You're not going to do yourself any good.
You got it, man. Just live with it right there.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that he doesn't want to feel like he's peaked. That's part of it, too. But yeah, I mean, obviously two very Japanese inspired or derived properties there. And where I would kind of leave off there, one last thing, is that I have also been, I am current with the current release of the new season of Attack on Titan. So three episodes have come out so far, and I'm quite pleased. They pick right up where they left off, and the first three episodes, for those who are curious, adapt the 9th volume of the manga. So if you go to your Barnes & Noble or bookseller of your choice and get volume 9, you can see for yourself that it is almost line for line, frame by frame, rearranged a little bit, but they get all that material into those three episodes, and they do a very good job of representing the material. So it's picking up where they left off back at the end of season 1, way, way back. And really glad to see that. Good to have it back.
Now, how many episodes is it going to be?
I'm not sure. I mean, the first season was 25, I think, so I imagine it's probably going to be roughly the same amount. But I don't know that I even looked. I probably should look that up so that I'm not disappointed if they only do 13 and then get to the end of it and be like, oh, that's it, now you got to wait 4 more years. But no, I don't think that's the case. Given the amount of material that they said that they were trying to cover in the second season, they're going to need quite a lot of time to go through that. So I'm fairly sure it's, you know, 24 to 26 episodes. Now, let's see. There's still a couple other news items on here. I'll just notice or note them. Some of them didn't actually get on here. Colony, for instance, has been renewed for a third season, as has The Magicians, which I'm very happy about. Yeah. A lot of shows getting renewed, so good news there.
That's on my Magicians is on my binge list for a little bit later this summer.
Yes, yes. Be aware that they do have the digital versions, much like The Expanse. They don't bleep them out. So, yeah.
Yes, the latest Expanses were fairly obvious in their bleeping. They.
Yes, if you watch the versions on you know live or the DVR'd versions, you're getting the sanitized versions. But Sci-Fi, oddly enough, pretty much releases the unedited versions almost immediately thereafter. So I prefer the unedited myself just because it gets distracting when you hear bleeping. So, and Vassarala has a great delivery of certain very strong words. So.
Yes, yeah, definitely true.
All right. But beyond that, I guess, interesting thing that keeps going on. This news that before season 2 even airs, Netflix has renewed a series of unfortunate events for a third season. All this, I've seen this a few times actually, where it's before the next season even airs, they've renewed it.
This has been happening, as you said, more and more frequently. In some cases, it's after the first episode. I often wonder, is there some contractual time frame that if they hook it in early, they pay less or something like that? I'm not sure, but as you said, it's sort of nebulous of why they jump on these things as fast. And I have to imagine it's something about either securing talent, either in front or behind the camera, or something to do with actually money. It can't be anything else but those two, because that's what it takes to make the show. So I have a feeling that if we ever had a chance to see some of these contracts, maybe it would be more obvious to us.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, especially for maybe these online distributors. Now, there's this other little note here about something that's in development that I know you put your name against. So I don't know if you have a few ideas or you know a little bit more about
that
than I do.
Yes, actually, I do. I am a huge Amanda Connor fan. I've had the pleasure of meeting her and her husband Jimmy several times at a few different conventions, and they're just really down to earth, great people. Really love what they're doing. Trying to do more, get more exposure, expand out. Definitely, they've really pushed into self publishing a lot. Even though Amanda's currently enjoying a great amount of success with her Harlequin books. What they announced was they pulled one of her old properties, and I'm sure it was an independent property, called The Pro, and it was this prostitute who gets superpowers and eventually joins some analog of the Justice League, and I can't think of a polite way in of conversation and hijinks ensue. Propositions the Superman analog on why he's never had sex. Come on, let's go. And there's she's crude. Her costume is literally put together from a box of spare costume parts that the Justice League analog had laying around. And you know, she doesn't necessarily want to give up hooking even after she gets superpowers. So while it does, I don't want to say it glamorizes it, because it definitely treats it, you know, does not, I would not say gives a positive spin to prostitution. You get the sense that she doesn't know any better.
Ah, I see.
So it's she's very foul-mouthed. Definitely, you know, I can see where they pulled aspects of this character into the current jokester-style Harley Quinn comic books are, but without the lunacy about it, I guess, might be a way to look at it. So there was nudity in the book. There's lots of foul language. There's strong sexual content in it. And so I'm not quite – I picked it up just enjoying Amanda Conner's work, and boy, was I surprised. It's definitely a unique story. I could see them definitely casting it either going full tongue-in-cheek, going drama with it, or somewhere in between. I imagine – my personal guess is they'd go somewhere tongue-in-cheek along Deadpool, so to speak. So we'll have to see what it happens, but this came out a long time ago. Came out about 15 years ago, back in 2002, and it's been printed several times. I believe it was originally released through Image Comics, but now their private line of comics that Amanda Conner and Jim Palmiotti do is called. It's called Paper Films, and if you go to paperfilms.com, you can see not only this project, but several of their other graphic novels they put out. Not all of them are, I would call them, as adult as the as this pro comic book is. They have ones that honestly range from something you would be more than happy to show to little children to very serious books, or definitely adult content books as well. They seem to sort of cover the whole genre, and they do a lot of Kickstarters for their own imprints, and they've been really good on delivering on them. I've done 4 of them so far, and they have always had them done on time when they promise them, and deliver them, if not as promised, with or sometimes with even extra stuff thrown in, just because they love us. They really are. They love the comic book genre, and they want to support it, and but they, as they say, they said they make a lot more money doing their own books than they ever make selling to DC or Marvel. So while they're not going to stop doing completely outside works, they are trying to focus on their own personal projects where they're not either influenced or forced to work with other characters. So while they are still doing works with DC Comics, at least at the moment, they are still cranking out several new books with their with their own personal imprint of Paper Film. So I definitely recommend it, but I've strayed from the film news a little too often. They've announced that Jessica Chastain is currently attached to the film in development.
Wow.
Palmiotti is currently writing the book, and they're talking about bringing Garth Ennis in as well for production. The thumbnail sketch of what it is it's a she's a prostitute who one day wakes up with superpowers and is asked to join the League of Honor to help curb her anti-heroic behaviors. The film is meant to put a humorous twist on the superhero genre. So we'll have to see. Somebody's acquired the rights, and they're talking about Jessica Chastain, but nothing's finalized. They're definitely not shooting or anything like that yet. But like I said, it would be a fun content. I imagine they, given Jessica Chastain, they would have to cut back on some of the nudity in at least one or two of the scenes in the original property. But at the same time, it's hilarious. It's nearly a adult version of Mad Magazine in a sense, but. But yeah, it's very very tongue-in-cheek and humorous, but heavy adult content, but enjoyable. If you're an adult 18 or older, I definitely recommend it. There are some shocking scenes, as I said, definitely strong nudity and sexual situations, but all done tongue-in-cheek. So it's take it for what it's worth, but you'll laugh.
Sounds like a recommendation to me.
So it's a lot of fun, and they're great, and they're just such good people that I can only wish them success with whatever they do. So
that's always helpful. All right, let's see here. I think that this is a good place for us to end this particular episode. We've had a lot of discussion here. But what we'll do is next time when we come back, we've got a couple weeks' worth of episodic discussion. So we will delve into the first week's worth. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.